January 63. Left camp at Falmouth with some wounded a few days since, and came here by Aquia Creek Railroad, and so on government steamer up the Potomac. I am now remaining in and around Washington, daily visiting the hospitals. Am much in Patent Office, 8th Street, H Street, Armory Square, and others. Am now able to do a little good, having money, as almoner of others' home, and getting experience. Today, Sunday afternoon until 9 in the evening, visited Campbell Hospital. Attended especially to one case in Ward 1, very sick with pleurisy and typhoid fever. Young man, farmer's son, D.F. Russell, Company E, 60th, New York. Downhearted and feeble. A long time before he would take any interest. Wrote a letter home to his mother in Malone, Franklin County, New York, at his request. Gave him some fruit and one or two other gifts. Enveloped and directed his letter and so forth. Then went thoroughly through Ward 6. Observed every case in the ward without, I think, missing one. Gave perhaps from 20 to 30 persons, each one some little gift, such as oranges, apples, sweet crackers, figs, and so forth. Found several cases I thought good subjects for small sums of money, which I furnished. The wounded men often come up broke, and it helps their spirits to have even the small sum I give them. Wednesday, February 4th. Visited Armory Square Hospital. Went pretty thoroughly through wards E and D. Supplied paper and envelopes to all who wished. As usual, found plenty of men who needed those articles. Wrote letters. Saw and talked with two or three members of the Brooklyn 14th Regiment. A poor fellow in Ward D, with a fearful wound in a fearful condition, was having some loose splinters of bone taken from the neighborhood of the wound. The operation was long and one of great pain. Yet, after it was well commenced, the soldier bore it in silence. He sat up, propped, was much wasted, had lain a long time quiet in one position, not for days only, but weeks. A bloodless, brown-skinned face, with eyes full of determination, belonged to a New York regiment. There was an unusual cluster of surgeons, medical cadets, nurses, and so forth around his bed. I thought the whole thing was done with tenderness and done well. In one case, the wife sat by the side of her husband, his sickness, typhoid fever, pretty bad. In another, by the side of her son, a mother. She told me she had 7 children, and this was the youngest. A fine, kind, healthy, gentle mother, good-looking, not very old, with a cap on her head, and dressed like home. What a charm it gave to the whole ward. I liked the woman nurse in Ward E. I noticed how she sat a long time by a poor fellow who had just had that morning, in addition to his other sickness, bad hemorrhage. She gently assisted him, relieved him of the blood, holding a cloth to his mouth as he coughed it up. He was so weak, he could only just turn his head over on the pillow. Not youth pertains to me. Not youth pertains to me, nor delicatesse. I cannot beguile the time with talk, awkward in the parlor, neither a dancer nor elegant, in the learned coterie sitting constrained and still, for learning inures not to me, beauty, knowledge inure not to me. Yet there are 2 or 3 things inure to me. I have nourished the wounded and soothed many a dying soldier, and at intervals waiting or in the midst of camp, composed these songs. February 24th. A spell of fine, soft weather. I wander about a good deal, sometimes at night under the moon. Tonight, took a long look at the president's house. The white portico, the palace-like tall, round columns, spotless as snow. The walls also. The tender and soft moonlight flooding the pale marble and making peculiar, faint, languishing shades, not shadows. Everywhere a soft, transparent, hazy, thin blue moon lace hanging in the air, the brilliant and extra plentiful clusters of gas on and around the facade, columns, porticos, and so forth. Everything so white, so marbly pure and dazzling, yet soft. The White House of future poems and of dreams and dramas, there in the soft and copious moon. The gorgeous front, in the trees, under the lustrous flooding moon, full of reality, full of illusion. The forms of the trees, leafless, silent, in trunk and myriad angles of branches under the stars and sky. The White House of the land, and of beauty and night. Sentries at the gates, and by the portico, silent, pacing there in blue overcoats, stopping you not at all, but eyeing you with sharp eyes whichever way you move. May 12th. There was part of the late battle at Chancellorsville, 2nd Fredericksburg, a little over a week ago, Saturday night and Sunday, under General Joe Hooker, I would like to give just a glimpse of, a moment's look in a terrible storm at sea, of which a few suggestions are enough and full details impossible. The fighting had been very hot during the day, and after an intermission, the latter part was resumed at night and kept up with furious energy till 3 o'clock in the morning. That afternoon, Saturday, an attack, sudden and strong by Stonewall Jackson, had gained a great advantage to the Southern Army and broken our lines, entering us like a wedge and leaving things in that position at dark. But Hooker, at 11 at night, made a desperate push, drove the Secesh forces back, restored his original lines, and resumed his plans. This night scrimmage was very exciting and afforded countless strange and fearful pictures. The fighting had been general both at Chancellorsville and northeast at Fredericksburg. But it was the tug of Saturday evening, and through the night and Sunday morning I wanted to make a special note of. It was largely in the woods and quite a general engagement. The night was very pleasant, at times the moon shining out full and clear, all nature so calm in itself, the early summer grass so rich and foliage of the trees, yet there the battle raging, and many good fellows lying helpless, with new accessions to them. And every minute amid the rattle of muskets and crash of cannon, for there was an artillery contest too, the red lifeblood oozing out from heads or trunks or limbs upon that green and dew-cool grass. Patches of the woods take fire, and several of the wounded, unable to move, are consumed. Quite large spaces are swept over, burning the dead also. Some of the men have their hair and beards singed. Some burns on their faces and hands, others holes burnt in their clothing. The flashes of fire from the cannon, the quick flaring flames and smoke, and the immense roar, the musketry so general, the light nearly bright enough for each side to see the other, the crashing, tramping of men, the yelling, close quarters. We hear the Secesh yells. Our men cheer loudly back, especially if Hooker is in sight. Hand-to-hand conflicts. Each side stands up to it, brave, determined as demons. They often charge upon us. 1,000 deeds are done, worth to write newer, greater poems on. And still the woods on fire. Still many are not only scorched, too many, unable to move, are burned to death. Then the camps of the wounded. Oh, heavens, what scene is this? Is this indeed humanity? These butchers, shambles? There are several of them. One man is shot by a shell, both in the arm and leg. Both are amputated. There lie the rejected members. Some have their legs blown off. Some bullets through the breast. Some indescribably horrid wounds in the face or head. All mutilated, sickening, torn, gouged out. Some in the abdomen. Some mere boys. Many rebels, badly hurt. They take their regular turns with the rest. Just the same as any, the surgeons use them just the same. Such is the camp of the wounded. Such a fragment, a reflection afar off of the bloody scene, while over all the clear, large moon comes out at times, softly, quietly shining. Amid the woods, that scene of flitting souls, amid the crack and crash and yelling sounds, the impalpable perfume of the woods, and yet the pungent, stifling smoke, the radiance of the moon, looking from heaven at intervals so placid, the sky so heavenly, the clear obscure up there, those buoyant upper oceans, a few large, placid stars beyond, coming silently and languidly out, and then disappearing. The melancholy draperied night above, around. And there, upon the roads, the fields, and in those woods, that contest. Never one more desperate in any age or land. Both parties now in force, masses. No fancy battle, no semi-play, but fierce and savage demons fighting there. Courage and scorn of death the rule, exceptions almost none. What history, I say, can ever give? For who can know the mad, determined tussle of the armies in all their separate large and little squads as this, each steeped from crown to toe in desperate mortal purports? Who know the conflict hand to hand, the many conflicts in the dark, those shadowy, tangled, flashing, moon-beamed woods, the writhing groups and squads, the cries, the din, the cracking guns and pistols, the distant cannon, the cheers and calls and threats and awful music of the oaths, the indescribable mix, the officers' orders, persuasions, encouragements, the devils fully roused in human hearts, the strong shout, charge, men, charge, the flash of the naked sword and rolling flame and smoke. And still the broken, clear, and clouded heaven, and still again the moonlight pouring silvery soft its radiant patches over all. A sight in camp in the daybreak gray and dim. A sight in camp in the daybreak gray and dim, as from my tent I emerge so early sleepless, as slow I walk in the cool fresh air, the path nearby the hospital tent. Three forms I see on stretchers lying, brought out there untended lying. Over each the blanket spread, ample brownish woolen blanket, gray and heavy blanket, folding, covering all. Curious, I halt and silent stand. Then, with light fingers, I, from the face of the nearest, the first, just lift the blanket. Who are you, elderly man, so gaunt and grim, with well-grayed hair and flesh all sunken about your eyes? Who are you, my dear comrade? Then to the second I step. And who are you, my child and darling? Who are you, sweet boy, with cheeks yet blooming? Then to the third, a face, nor child nor old, very calm, as of beautiful yellow-white ivory. Young man, I think I know you. I think this face is the face of the Christ himself, dead and divine and brother of all, and here again he lies. June 25th, sundown. As I sit writing this paragraph, I see a train of about 30 huge four-horse wagons used as ambulances, filled with wounded, passing up 14th Street, on their way probably to Columbian, Carver, and Mount Pleasant hospitals. This is the way the men come in now, seldom in small numbers, but almost always in these long, sad processions. Through the past winter, while our army lay opposite Fredericksburg, the like strings of ambulances were of frequent occurrence along 7th Street, passing slowly up from the steamboat wharf with loads from Aquia Creek. O tan-faced prairie boy, O tan-faced prairie boy, before you came to camp came many a welcome gift. Praises and presents came, and nourishing food, till at last among the recruits you came, taciturn, with nothing to give. We but looked on each other, when lo, more than all the gifts of the world you gave me. The soldiers are nearly all young men, and far more American than is generally supposed. I should say 9/10 are native-born. Among the arrivals from Chancellorsville, I find a large proportion of Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois men. As usual, there are all sorts of wounds. Some of the men fearfully burnt from the explosions of artillery caissons. One ward has a long row of officers, some with ugly hurts. Yesterday was perhaps worse than usual. Amputations are going on. The attendants are dressing wounds. As you pass by, you must be on your guard where you look. I saw the other day a gentleman, a visitor, apparently from curiosity, in one of the wards, stop and turn a moment to look at an awful wound they were probing. He turned pale, and in a moment more he had fainted away and fallen on the floor. Cavalry crossing a ford. A line in long array where they wind betwixt green islands. They take a serpentine course. Their arms flash in the sun. Hark to the musical clank. Behold the silvery river. In it the splashing horses loitering stop to drink. Behold the brown-faced men. Each group, each person a picture. The negligent rest on the saddles. Some emerge on the opposite bank. Others are just entering the ford, while scarlet and blue and snowy white, the guidon flags flutter gaily in the wind. I am writing this nearly sundown, watching a cavalry company, acting signal service, just come in through a shower, making their night's camp ready on some broad, vacant ground, a sort of hill, in full view opposite my window. There are the men in their yellow-striped jackets. All are dismounted. The freed horses stand with drooping heads and wet sides. They are to be led off presently in groups to water. The little wall tents and shelter tents spring up quickly. I see the fires already blazing and pots and kettles over them. Some among the men are driving in tent poles, wielding their axes with strong, slow blows. I see great huddles of horses, bundles of hay, groups of men, some with unbuckled sabers yet on their sides, a few officers, piles of wood, the flames of the fires, saddles, harness, and so forth. The smoke streams upward. Additional men arrive and dismount. Some drive in stakes and tie their horses to them. Some go with buckets for water. Some are chopping wood and so on. July 6th. A steady rain, dark and thick and warm. A train of 6 mule wagons has just passed, bearing pontoons, great square-end flatboats, and the heavy planking for overlaying them. We hear that the Potomac above here is flooded, and are wondering whether Lee will be able to get back across again, or whether Meade will indeed break him to pieces. The cavalry camp on the hill is a ceaseless field of observation for me. This forenoon, there stand the horses, tethered together, dripping, steaming, chewing their hay. The men emerge from their tents, dripping also. The fires are half quenched. July 10th. Still the camp opposite. Perhaps 50 or 60 tents. Some of the men are cleaning their sabers. Pleasant today. Some brushing boots. Some laying off. Reading. Writing. Some cooking. Some sleeping. On long temporary cross sticks back of the tents are cavalry accoutrements. Blankets and overcoats are hung out to air. There are the squads of horses tethered, feeding, continually stamping and whisking their tails to keep off flies. I sit long in my third-story window and look at the scene. 100 little things going on. Peculiar objects connected with the camp that could not be described, any one of them, justly, without much minute drawing and coloring in words. By the bivouac's fitful flame, by the bivouac's fitful flame, a procession winding round me, solemn and sweet and slow. But first I note the tents of the sleeping army, the fields and woods' dim outline, the darkness lit by spots of kindled fire, the silence, like a phantom far or near, an occasional figure moving, the shrubs and trees. As I lift my eyes, they seem to be stealthily watching me, while wind in procession thoughts, oh, tender and wondrous thoughts, of life and death, of home and the past and loved, and of those that are far away. A solemn and slow procession there, as I sit on the ground by the bivouac's fitful flame.